Now, I was much earlier in my writing career, and this is when those parenting magazines still existed. And I went to a writing conference, and I got to hang out with a bunch of other writers, including people whose bylines I was seeing in all of these. And it was, you know, casual conversation at this point in time. And to hear these people talking, first of all, that they sometimes struggle with writing. And these are parenting writers that, despite all of the confident-sounding articles, that they sometimes still struggle with the actual parenting. Kate, that was a revolution for me.
This is Finding the Throughline, the show that gives you inside access to honest conversations about the creative process. I'm Kate Hanley. Today's guest is seasoned freelance writer and author Jennifer Fink, who writes about parenting, especially parenting boys, healthcare, and education, although not necessarily in that order. Jennifer's most recent book is called Building Boys, Raising Great Guys in a World That Misunderstands Males, and she also co-hosts a podcast called On Boys, which I hope you will check out. Today, I'm talking with Jennifer about what I call inner stuff, the thoughts, ideas, and attitudes that affect your work, even if you're not fully conscious of it. So, Jennifer, does creating work and then sharing that work with the world come easily to you? It's kind of two halves of the same coin, but feel free to talk about either half or both.
It does not at all. I have been working for years on, you know, I have this very perfectionistic side. And when I was younger, and it applied to all aspects of my life, not just creative work, all aspects of my life. If I didn't think I could be really good at something, if not the best, then I wouldn't even try it. Mm-hmm. As you can imagine, that really limits you right here. You have a very narrow, narrow lane. And so I've got better about that. Actually, having boys has challenged me to break out of that because I wanted them to see you can try things and see what happens. So I'm doing better on that in my personal life. But man, with writing, it's very, very, very scary still. And in some ways, it's gotten harder with some success because you expect to be able to hit that level all the time. And you don't want to put something out and have somebody say, well, this is terrible. And the internet exists. I mean, I spend enough time on the internet, and I think we all do. You can almost hear what the trolls are going to say before you finish the thought in your own head. And it's really easy to just let that keep you from creating work, from doing the work, or from putting it out there because it's also hard work to make the work. It's easier to not do it. It's easier to just scroll and look at what other people have created.
Right. So how do you get yourself over that?
I struggle with it all the time. And I will be honest, one of the reasons why I have a co-host for my podcast, why I partnered with Janet Allison of Boys Alive, it's twofold. I mean, she's got skills that I don't have, and she was more willing to tackle the technical side and the audio side, and I had the writing. And having that accountability of somebody else really helps me. And so that's why I've been able to do a podcast for 6 years. She and I have recently started creating some courses that we're putting out to people, to parents.
Nice.
And one of them, like, I had the idea for years, but there's nothing like having somebody else say, yeah, that's a good idea. Let's set some dates. And setting up dates, now I've got a deadline. I have to make it happen. Yes, I can do that myself, but I don't respect my own deadlines and times as much as I do if it involves somebody else. And that's an admission right there. That is something that I know that I struggle with. And I try and get better at that. Right now, I'm trying to create something just for me. And I've got it scribbled, but I haven't put anything out yet.
Relatable.
Yeah. I remember back when, you know, I was much earlier in my writing career. And this is when those parenting magazines still existed. And I went to a writing conference, and I got to hang out with a bunch of other writers, including people whose bylines I was seeing in all of these. And it was, you know, casual conversation at this point in time. And to hear these people talking, first of all, that they sometimes struggle with writing. And these are parenting writers that, despite all of the confident-sounding articles, that they sometimes still struggle with the actual parenting. Kate, that was a revolution for me. I thought I was the only one, and maybe I'm the only one who thinks that, but hearing that it's not easy for other people was empowering for me in a way, because it sort of gave me internal permission to step forward without feeling like I had to have it all together first.
I mean, why do you think I started this podcast? I do think there's certain just torture that we inflict upon ourselves in our own little silos. And if we realize that we're all doing it, then maybe we'll at least reduce the torture factor a little bit.
Yes, I think so. Because you have to know that it's normal, it's typical, it's part of the process. If you feel that way, it doesn't mean you can't do it. Because look, here are these other people who feel that way, and they're doing a perfectly great job with their careers and with their children. So, maybe I could do that too.
Yes. I'm curious. I ask everybody this, and I find the answer so fascinating, even though they're often close to each other. The differences, there's differences there, and I find them fascinating. Yeah. What kinds of things does your inner critic love to tell you?
I suck. I suck. You're no good at this. You have nothing original to say. It's all been said before. Who are you? On repeat, over and over and over and over. Mm-hmm.
Are there situations where you notice that it's going to pipe up more reliably than others?
In some ways, it is louder when I am doing the work that I most care about. And I mean that I do a lot of writing yet. I do a lot of health writing. I do education writing. And I care about every assignment I take on. What I care about most from a personal standpoint is this, what I call it, the boy work, you know, talking about boys, writing about boys, about parenting boys. And because I care so deeply about that work, and because it matters so much to me and to the world, I think, and because we live in this world right now where it is really easy for people to criticize, especially if you are making any claims that one group needs attention, especially if you are claiming that that group is male, that has historically had a lot of attention, I can hear all those criticisms so loudly while I'm doing it, and that can get between me and doing the work.
Mm-hmm. And so, in those instances, have you developed strategies or tools, or what do you do?
I'm back to timers and deadlines, really. That's it. I mean, when I was writing my book, when I was writing Building Boys, the other big thing that I was dealing with was the fact that I have four boys who are conscious, who live in this world, mm-hmm. who have to live in this world that this book is going to come out in. And the book is subtitled Raising Great Guys. As my young adult males are navigating late adolescence and their early 20s, mm-hmm. like I was imagining all kinds of terrible headlines coming out, Kate. You have no idea. Like this is when they're going to do something stupid. It's going to be all over and their lives are going to be miserable. And my life is going to be miserable. And these kids are going to hate this. And I really just had to make it a point and force myself. And yeah, it was that unpleasant sometimes, you know, to sit down and set a timer and bang out however many words that I could in that time and splash it all up there on the computer document and then come back and somehow fix it into something. And I'll be damned if it didn't turn into like readable chapters, despite my fears every time. That's the thing. I think most writers get that. Even if you have done it multiple times, you still don't think it's going to work this time. Why is that, Kate?
I don't know. Even when we have this track record and all this proof.
Yeah.
I feel that.
And it worked. And I still worry if I can do it again.
Mom does deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Jennifer, how old are you?
I am 51 when we're recording, and I will be 52 this summer.
Okay. Well, your episode is coming out next week from when we're recording, so you will still be 51 when it comes out.
Woohoo!
Is there something you do or think that most people in your peer group don't?
Ooh, that is a great question. Of course, I don't know the answer. Because I don't know what everybody in my peer group thinks.
Or just a way that you maybe feel out of step with your peers or not.
I feel out of step with my peers a lot. And part of that is it's where I live. I live in a very small, rural, conservative area. And listen, a part of me resonates with that so much. I mean, my family roots are so, so, so deep here. The birthplace where my dad lived, or where my dad was born, in that farmhouse. I have literally lived within 10 miles of that most of my life. Different places, but literally within a few miles of that. And yet, I don't live my life here in a lot of ways because of my work. I am constantly connecting with people all throughout the country and experts at top universities and authors. And so, my world is very much lived in my head and on the internet. And then I come down and I look around and I'm like, oh, who are these people? And some of them I know and I remember, but I don't necessarily feel like I fit in. That's part of it. At 51, my kids are telling me all the time how old I am. I don't appreciate that. And I know they're kind of laughing, but I'm struggling with that. I'm struggling with self-concept, how old I feel versus how old I am versus what that means. That part, though, I think is quite common for this age group. I think a lot of us are currently dealing with that.
Yeah. Well, does your age have an impact on how you think about what is possible for you? I mean, definitely work-wise, but just in general.
It does, because here's what I'm struggling with the most about, I'll call it middle age, and other people will point out that actually it's kind of middle age heading into old age if you do the math.
Let's not do the math.
I know. I'm struggling with the fact that I am becoming a cliche. Kate, I started aqua aerobics recently with all the other middle aged to old women because I have been having issues with my back, because I have had back issues that have required me to make some changes in what I do for fitness. While I'm figuring that out, I'm like, oh, the water is low impact. Oh my God, I've become this caricature, is how I feel. And so when I look at what this means for my life, future, and creatively, some of it is dealing with the fact that I can't count on my body and brain always being ready and available. I feel like every day I wake up and it's like, well, which systems are working well today? What's not working so well today? When my back is bad, I can't sit at my computer and work. I'm on my couch, and that interferes with my flow. And then I get frustrated, and then I get angry. And turns out that doesn't actually help creativity. Other people have discovered that before me, but I'm still working my way through that one. And so I'm trying to find a way of coexistence in relation with this reality and trying to figure out what that looks like while having no clue what the future is going to be. I'm also very much at this moment in this caregiving sandwich, and I feel like I am in this very narrow hallway. And hallways for me are always the transition between like one stage of life and the next. When I went through my divorce, that was a hallway. The problem is, you never know how long the hallway is. Like, if somebody could just tell you, it would be easier for me. I don't know how long this hallway is. And I feel like I've got my parenting pushing down on me here because it still requires attention. And then I've got the elderly caregiving going on here. They don't really want help either, just like these, but oh boy, are there some issues. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a lot of room to navigate in the middle. And then somehow I have to figure out how to live up to those responsibilities, which I want to. I want to be clear. Like, parenting and relationships are ultimately the only thing that last in life. And I do mm-hmm. feel like, you know, a body of work, creative work, that also outlives us.
Mm-hmm.
But while I'm navigating all of that, I also have to live my own life in this little tunnel that mm-hmm. feels like it's getting increasingly smaller. And I don't know how to do that all the time. And that's where I do have to lean back on practices like morning pages, like trying to get outside, like trying to breathe and remind myself. But it's hard. I very much feel like I am in this point of transition, and I'm trying to figure out how to continue to make a living and use my creativity and live a life I want to live. And I'm not sure what that's going to look like moving forward.
Okay. Well, I want to say that I was in a similar tunnel last year and came out the other side. And there is so much to look forward to, even though it's really unpleasant. But, you know, sometimes
there's always goodness on the other side of the tunnel. But yeah. When you are in the tunnel, it's hard.
I know. It's hard. It's that pressure and the claustrophobia and the not knowing and the like feeling and fumbling your way. But
yes.
Just like the urgency of a deadline gets you to write something, I think like the darkness and the unknown of the tunnel gets you to really think about some stuff that you might otherwise just breeze right past.
Yes. Yes. I appreciate that. And I think that's powerful to think about too, because nobody lives their full life in the light, right? I mean, there are complications and challenges in every single life. And if you don't acknowledge that, or if you somehow expect you're exempt from that and you're fighting against it all the time, that gets harder.
Yeah. And we need to make things more easeful, if not easy, and not necessarily harder.
Yeah.
Well, I want to invite you on up to your soapbox if you are interested in doing that, and ask you if there are collective illusions that you really wish we would wake up from.
Collective illusions, yes. All right. Stepping onto the soapbox.
Okay.
Okay, first of all, it is possible to care about multiple things at the same time. It is possible to care about the well-being of multiple groups of people at the same time. So yes, I write and I advocate for boys. That does not mean I don't care about girls. I am a female. I am acutely aware of all those issues. I can care about two things at once. That's number one. Number two, you can disagree with people and it doesn't make them a bad person and it does not make you a bad person. And one of the things that is very difficult to deal with in life for all of us is good people can do bad things and bad people can do good things.
Mm-hmm.
It is not as neat and tidy as TV or as the movies or as songs. I try and talk to my kids about that, and I try and remember that in my own life, and I still wrestle with it. And let's see, third thing, I want to have three things. Another collective illusion I would like to shatter. No, I'm just going to share this one. Most people realize this, but my youngest son recently turned 18, and he has come to the realization that we all come to, is that the thing with adulthood is we don't actually know what we're doing anymore. It's not like we have all the answers. We have knowledge, we have experience, we have expertise, certainly, but we don't always know the right thing to do. And sometimes there is no clear answer. And I do think a lot of life is staying open to that truth and accepting it and somehow finding ways to move forward in a world in which there's very little that is completely known.
Listen, I love that you brought a list like that. That was really awesome. Thank you so much for sharing all those answers. And that wraps up our questions on the inner parts of the creative process. I'm really looking forward to getting a preview of what's coming up for you and hearing about kind of lighter topics like what you're currently staying up too late and reading and watching. Thanks for being here, everyone who is listening. Really appreciate you being here. And we will talk to you more on Friday. Finding the Throughline airs one interview per week, broken up into three episodes that come out every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free. Skip the ads and get each interview in one longer episode by becoming a paid subscriber at katehanley.substack.com. Even if you aren't ready to get out your wallet just yet, become a free subscriber at katehanley.substack.com and receive the full show notes with links to everything my guests and I cover. However you listen, thank you. Finding the Throughline is edited by Sound Advice Strategies. Connect with me on Instagram at Kate Hanley Author. Here's a little preview of what's to come in part three of this interview.
So much of my life has been taking these little steps and then kind of seizing opportunities that come up. And I can't tell you which opportunities are going to come up. Like, where's that perfect marriage going to be, or those opportunities? But you have to take your steps and then keep your eyes open and be willing to be open to doing things that sort of seem like they align or are another step along the way.
I'm Kate Hanley, and this is Finding the Throughline. More to come on Friday.